Yeah, how you doing, babe?
Oh my goodness, it's crazy as usual.
It's crazy as usual. Thank you for calling in, Sammy Brown. Okay, so anyway, we're actually doing this on the air because I'm too lazy to disconnect everything. Okay, but that's okay. We're not gonna.
That's right.
We're not going to, you know, have, you know, like one of those conversations that can't be reproduced, you know, without embarrassment. Hopefully, at least not to you. Maybe to me, but you know. Anyway. So I've been looking forward to talking to you because we're going to do this interview up in some sort of article for the Good Newspaper, which is actually due day after tomorrow now. Ahem.
I'm so sorry.
No, I'll just have to, you know, whatever you don't say and that I like, I'll have to make up or something like that, you know. After she graduated from Harvard, she... Okay, anyway, et cetera. So, good morning, Sammy. Sammy Brown, a recent Democratic candidate for a delegate from Charlestown in the what district? Hello? What district were you running in?
65.
And she ran a great campaign. You know, she kind of got... edged out by the what we'll call the Trump effect, you know, a derangement that swept the country. but anyway,
epidemic, yeah.
And also she's currently a vice president of the Eastern Panhandle Central Labor Council, and mm-hmm. recently elected to that job, you know. And it's beginning to look like a family affair with her and her mother both on the council. But,
you know what it is? I'm really just taking a page out of the old guard's book and trying to, you know, leverage everything in my favor. That's what it is.
Well, yeah. You know, you got to bring it all to bear. Nepotism, family, connections, the whole bit, right? Yeah, exactly.
It's like conspiracy for domination, John Case.
That's yes, right. Oh, okay. I'm glad. Well, you know, this is the era of dominions, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
And so, anyway. Okay, so let me, some serious questions here. One is, you know, what are you doing now? Where are you going?
So, at the moment, I'm a bit of a freedom fighter for hire, actually. So I've been working pretty collaboratively with progressive groups, not only in the state, but national progressive groups. To bring action to the state and nationwide. One of the actions that I did was protesting against the Electoral College and at least having them, the individuals that were supposed to represent us on the Electoral College actually represent, you know, the people of West Virginia. In my opinion, they did not. So there was that protest not too long ago. We also protested to fix, not nix, ACA. So that'll be also a movement that you'll see go through. Healthcare is incredibly important, but then West Virginia is definitely one of the top states in America that would be deeply devastated if ACA were to be repealed. So there's that. You know, I'm also rebuilding young activism. So between young active labor leaders, which I will,
you are. There you go. Okay.
I'm hoping really to build that, and then you know, mentor someone else so that they can lead the charge as well. And then for young Democrats, I am our most visible young Democrat in the state of West Virginia. Not only am I our national committee woman, so I sit on the board for the nation as our West Virginian, but then I am on the regional board, and for the state, I am now the vice president of membership. So I go back to what my roots are, which is really organizing the troops.
Okay, so this is for the Democratic Party, right?
For that, yes.
When you said president, vice presidents, you know, et cetera, yeah, you're talking about the Democratic Party and Democratic Party committees, right?
Well, yes, but it's for young Democrats, the Young Democrats of America.
Oh, okay, Young Democrats of America. Okay, so it's not quite the Democrat. Oh, I gotcha. Okay, all right, cool. The Democrats have lost all three branches of government, looks like, fairly decisively, despite the Electoral College discrepancy matter there. Why have they done that? And And what's, you know, I hear a lot of debate on, you know, the Facebook, the blogs, everything about this. Did I just lose you? Are you still there?
Still here.
I know something happened. I don't know. It was the river of internet packets got diverted somehow.
Well, they knew that I was quite the rebel.
So. Anyway, what's wrong with the Democratic Party that it's lost all three? And before you answer, let me just say Jeff Kessler's answer was it's just a big cycle. Things come and go. Basically.
No, that's okay. So as much as I love and respect Jeff, like I don't agree with that.
Okay.
And he's a good man. He's a good
no,
man.
No, there is so, room for many opinions on this. I mean, I'm just, right. Okay.
I'm going to tell you this. Ebb and flow in politics is inevitable, and I totally understand that. But the reality is that this party, especially in the state, has lost touch with the people that put them in place to begin with. And when you take people for granted, they will backlash. You can see it with a national movement right now. Why do you think that there is something called the resistance? Why do you think that there's so many people protesting right now? It's because their voices weren't heard and they were taken for granted. And the reality is in West Virginia, the Democratic Party did nothing to make sure that they were truly encompassing working people. What they're hearing, the average voter is hearing right now, that I have so little and you keep wanting to take from me, you know, my family values, my faith. Why won't you speak to that? And the way it's positioned, and it's positioned beautifully by conservatives and the right, is that we have undermined those particular values. And I have to say that we did that to ourselves. If we're not doing the proper outreach, if we're not going door to door, if we're not making sure that the values are in simplified terms so that people can buy in, then we will lose the people, and we did. I will say in my own race, you know, it was my first race. I am a decidedly progressive candidate, but I got 40% of the vote because I went and I worked incredibly hard to touch each and every person at the door. And I was fortunate enough to have a couple volunteers that came in and wanted to do the same kind of work with me. Now, it will take me a little bit to rebuild and to build on a movement and make sure that people truly understand what we're about, and that, you know, this particular candidate is far different than how we've been positioned in the past, which is a bunch of people that take. And we have to truly be representative and truly be public servants before we're ever going to get that kind of buy-in again.
Yeah.
You also can't expect that, you know, and I saw this throughout races throughout the state, that there should be a concentrated effort in races that we can win and truly make change and affect folks on the localized level. And I will unabashedly tell you that that's not the focus of the Democratic Party here. And I have no problem saying that at all. It was very, very clear that the top of the ticket took priority, and where we really needed to put the resources was the bottom up. And I say that for city council, county commission, all the way up through legislature.
Right.
So until we get that mindset that it's very grassroots, it's very populist, then we're going to continue to lose races in cycles like these.
Okay. Another kind of, let me just say, I've heard a number of different points of view reflecting on the election. And, you know, one a friend of mine, well, a former friend of mine, he don't agree with me now, but, you know, Jeffrey Jacks, you know, actually not a bad fellow, but he in his view, you know, all the economic excuses offered about why certain white workers, are you still there?
Mm-hmm.
Well, about certain white workers voted for Trump are just plain unacceptable to him, and he's looking at just sort of writing those folks off indefinitely, and focusing on trying to keep the Obama coalition. I think he means by that a you know, sort of the multicultural coalition. I'm not quite sure, you know, exactly what he meant by that. I mean, and that was one of the phrases I had a problem with. You know, what is that really? You know, and on the other hand, yeah. On the other hand, I see people that, I mean, how do you deal with the fact that the building trades or certain members of the building trades went to Trump and effectively kind of normalized him because of the deal with the pipeline and the Dakota Access thing and the XL pipeline and this problem of jobs and the fact that the labor movement is just being strangled to death everywhere. So.
Sure.
I don't know. Do you have a view on how these kinds of concerns?
Well, so let me first address the first topic that concerns me a little bit. You can't fight discrimination by discriminating against other people. So I do feel like maybe folks may not have your exact mindset or understand where you're coming from, but if we are truly to be activists and advocates for the cause, then we're going to have to learn the message to those people. I'm not saying that there aren't going to be individuals that you will never get to, and that's okay. But the other component of that is you can't write off people and decidedly say that you're an activist or a public servant. So that's my first thought. The second thought is, I will say the same thing about leadership within my own movement as I will say with leadership within government, which is the people have to hold their leadership accountable and harden their spines. With that, you have to say to them that this is not normal. These are not my values. These are not my beliefs. That individual does not represent me. And if they refuse to do so, well, that's when you make the movement. And that's why we have a democratic process to begin with. That's why democracy is in place, is that you search to be that leadership. When it comes to the building trades, I do feel that, you know, they did that as a survival method. And again, I have to reiterate that this is going to be uncomfortable. There are going to be things that are not going to go your way. But in order for there to be true progress, you have to make that stance and say that this is not okay, this is not normal, and, you know, that, you know, abiding by these so-called regulations is not going to get you what you need. It may keep you in place for a little while longer, but know that they're not out there to advocate for you or protect you in any way, shape, or form.
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, it's true that history teaches us that at times, sometimes not of our choice, really, even though they may be reflect our aggregate choices, but there's times when you don't. There are things worse than dying, and there are things worse than losing your job. But on the other hand, I mean, you know, what is a job and what is that? Well, I mean, that's what is money? What is economics in our society? Well, I mean, it's the means of life for millions and millions of people. So you can't.
Gone, but then my pushback to that is, you know, what does it mean when your wages are cut so low that you have no quality of life? What does it mean when those wages can't afford you what you needed to survive to begin with? So yes, in title, you may have that job, but what about your human rights? What about civil rights? What about things that we should be striving for, which is quality of life, not working or not living to work, but work to live. You know, I just...
Yeah. No, exactly.
So,
sure.
I mean, there's so many components to this, and I feel like when it comes, again, the leadership here is similar to the leadership I feel is going on within the party structure. You have to broaden your scope. You have to understand that short-term win also may have negated the larger picture and the larger wins that we need for populist movement and progress.
You know, when you use that phrase, living to work or working to live, that reminds me. See that of a question that take yourself for example. Now you are active and you are you're in the living to work and living to do good work. kind of category in a way, right? And as almost all organizers I ever knew were, right? I mean, it was one of those occupations in which, you know, you're going to spend a good part of the day doing stuff you actually believe in, right? You know, as opposed to the conditions of many, many, many working people, right, who are in the other one, which is working to live, which means they're going to spend 8 hours a day doing something that they don't particularly like, maybe. Mm-hmm. Okay. Certainly, they're not thinking about it all the time. And it creates a very different kind of personal lifestyle than the other side of the coin, in a way. And so I wonder many of your thoughts, I mean, because you're, you know, active in the labor movement as well as, you know, young Democrats. And working people have, I mean, they're a lot... Once when I was first hired from the UE, Jim Matlis, who was the leader of the union at the time, he said to me, and he asked me a bunch of questions and interviewed me a long time, and then he said, so I was talking about, you know, the goals of the labor movement, and he stopped me and he said, no, the labor movement is a way of life, not just, you know, a set of programs and stuff like that. Does that ring a bell? Well, you're raised in a union. I just wonder if that rings a bell for you, you know, a little bit.
I think my mindset has shifted quite a bit, you know, from when I was younger. And I worked multiple jobs, actually, to get myself through school and kind of set myself up for success later. But at this point, you know, I did make the conscious decision to work for the things that I truly deeply believed in. And you know, my day job in and of itself is something that, you know, had I not thought that they were, you know, good people and, you know, that the cause was something I could get behind, right, I probably wouldn't be there. It's just a decision that I made. And I understand that that's not everyone's mindset. It doesn't need to be. But that is why I'm here. Like I definitely work in general for a cause, and it's because I'm passionate about it and I have made it my way of life. You know, for other folks, I just want to make sure that you get the things that you need to not only survive, but to actually thrive in your living situation. And that means a lot to me because, you know, I did see my mother, you know, work the way she did. I lived it. I, you know, working multiple jobs to pay for school. And then, you know, when I initially got out of school, that's, you know, yeah, there wasn't a lot of opportunities right off the bat. Right. So if you want to call it a sacrifice, so be it. But to me, it means a lot to make sure that others have the means to live a life that they want, regardless of what that is. And it looks very different for different people across the board.
Well, one of the big deals there, of course, is education. And were you raised in Charlestown schools?
I sure was.
You know, so as a veteran, okay, then, and you've been involved, of course, running for, you know, delegate, and where education policy was certainly one of the things that, you know, being talked about. What are your thoughts on, you know, really moving education forward or just merely defending it? I mean, what's this? How do you see the situation in Jefferson County? And what, if you were a student in your old high school today, what would be what should be your concerns, if any?
Well, to be honest, John, at the moment, we're fighting just to keep what little we have. On a legislative front, just because I know that there's going to be even more cuts done to education. Public schools there's a real threat to transitioning to charter schools, which would be detrimental to the people of West Virginia. You know, teachers aren't getting paid what they need. I'm seeing where they're not necessarily getting the tools and the means to execute class agenda either. And then something that deeply concerns me is the potential eradication of arts and mediums and alternative sources of learning. So I didn't learn everything I needed to learn in a science and math class, and that seems to be the general focus if we want to be, yeah, quote unquote business minded. And I think that's very restrictive. I also am deeply concerned about the overregulation and how teachers aren't being allowed to mentor their students because they do need more support than ever. They're being confronted with, the students in general are being confronted with way more components than ever before, whether it is an inundation of social media or traditional media, right, or even, you know, a ever-growing population and no means at home. You know, many kids are going home without parents, or there's just so many different things. And the way they find their support is with the people that educate them, and they just aren't being allowed to be that figurehead. And I will say that I survived school because there were people that there were teachers that took a special interest, that did care, that knew I had potential. And I know that our educators feel that way, but they aren't even being given the means to fully invest in their students the way they could. So if anything,
it's very
tough. How, and I'm still trying to work this, I'm still trying to figure this out on what is it that we can do to support them when, again, the education system and healthcare seem to be the two things that seem to get targeted every time there's budget cuts. What we'll also see too is childcare. Now you'll have 12,000 childcare subsidies that will be revoked in the next 30 days, and that you're going to budget cuts. I guess that's what they thought that
12,000 statewide or 12,000 in just county or where?
Statewide, and still that's a large number regardless. But that's children that needed the child care system. And so you're going to see parents that are struggling now to balance the jobs that they need to support their families and be home with their child because they don't have the child care subsidies. And again, that trickles back into the education system. You know, are again, children getting the support they need at home in order to filter through our system. And then, of course, another aspect or component that I deeply, deeply care about is the achievement gap. And there's a lot of argument about whether this is a race issue, whether this is a socioeconomic issue. And quite frankly, I think it's both. You know, if we're not providing the jobs that we need to make sure that parents have, again, the quality of life, and I keep going back to that, but if they don't have the quality of life, how are they supposed to be there with their children to make sure that they are attending school? And it does seem to adversely affect impoverished communities and communities that are predominantly Hispanic, Black, and Native American. So it works both ways. And here these children are, they deserve the same quality education, and yet they're falling behind. And it goes back to supporting, again, from the bottom up, the middle up, if you want to call it that, and making sure that folks have what they need to survive. In my mind, this is all very, very interconnected. And, it's also why I'm so passionate in the labor movement. It's why, you know, regardless of where I go in life, this is something that I feel that I have to have my hands in, because regardless of how people feel about us at the moment or how we've been positioned, we are the people that fought for 40-hour work weeks, health care, paid time off, you know, diversification within the workplace, equal pay, and that's still, right. And these are all things that we're still going to have to fight for in the workplace, and it trickles back to families, education, and eventually, you know, the ability to thrive, in your life go forward.
Do you have any information? right. but now you got a you're a graduate of Shepherd, correct?
I am. I graduated from Shepherd. I have my bachelor's in communications. I concentrated in media studies and media law, and then I went back and got my master's of business administration. So I have an MBA.
Oh wow!
And I am on the board of directors for Shepherd University now, and
you're on Shepherd's board of directors now.
I'm on the board of directors.
Oh my God! Yeah. Well, maybe you can find out what happened to the radio station.
I'm really I'm honored that the university has reached back to me, and I wasn't exactly the perfect student. I was a bit of a wild child.
Oh, dear.
But I did love that place, and they did give me the opportunity to grow. And I just, I want to make sure that there's some sort of positive influence. And especially for the students, you know, I'm not too much older than they are. I experienced a lot of the things that they're experiencing. If I can be there to make sure that the programs that they need to get where they want to in life, then I will absolutely have a hand in that.
What are those programs, in your view, that you say that you've used that phrase, the programs that they need? And, I mean, do you have a particular viewpoint on that?
In general, I know that there's been a lot of growth in the communications department, but it was a program that I strongly believed in because it reached across so many fields of employment. So if there was a way to elevate the technological basis of it, and especially for, we still have a large population of students that maybe they were the first student from their family to ever go to school.
Right.
So just a way to inundate them with a true understanding of technology, thorough platform.
Right.
That was my concerted interest. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, I'm a big proponent of the arts, and I also I do a lot of mentorship and outreach for the student organizations, resume building, that type of thing. So it's just someone out there that, again, who isn't much older than them, that fought the same fight that they're fighting. If I can make it, you can too. And that's really a lot of where I have my hands at the moment.
Well, I think that's great, man. I mean, that's really good. I didn't know you. I didn't know that you were on the board of directors, and you know now, you know, we may exploit you in some form here. But
you might. I work closest with the Alumni Association, and that's a really great organization as well. And and it's kind of gone from there, so it's pretty cool. And
So maybe you'll start teaching. Maybe you'll start teaching there or something like that. You could be,
for right now, I'm going to work to mentor the students that want to organize on campus for the progressive cause. So I will start there.
Well, why don't you get a bunch of them that are interested in radio and serious that may want to learn skills that could earn them six figures later.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have it. I'm happy to get interns, you know, and stuff like that too.
We have
a lot of web work. We have radio automation. We have, that's a automated software is automation software is a big deal, actually, not just in radio, mm-hmm. but in mountaintop removal, all kinds of things. How do you keep those robots working?
and on time. That's the way we're transitioning too, John. So it makes sense to me that folks have as much exposure to that as possible. You don't want to get in the workforce and then you're incapable of kind of oscillating between, you know, the various platforms that folks have. It's how I've survived because, you know, I'm not afraid of technology. I'm very tech savvy. And, you know, I had my time on the board. You know,
years
and years. Yeah. So it transitioned well for me in other things.
Well, so all you need is about an hour a week, and come here and have your own program too.
Exactly,
you can do that. You know, this is well. No, I mean, it's not much different than over at the. I mean, we have a smaller soundboard, but mm-hmm. it works pretty much the same way. It's just only difference is going.
Epic radio will never be the same.
Epic radio. Well, it would be great. You know, you should. Yeah, but I'm sure you have no time at all. You're like, what are you doing? Five jobs or something like that. Anyway, how's your mother doing?
She's doing awesome. Right now she's in California and counting down the days to her 30-year retirement.
Yeah, right, to her retirement, right. That's coming right up. Oh, boy.
Yeah. I think she has 2 months left, 2-3 months
left. We're talking about Diane Brown, who's was a national health and safety expert for AFSCME. Am I right about that? I'm not sure what her exact title was.
Yeah, she is... She does. She's a health and safety specialist for AFSCME. She's done quite a few published works, and she works really closely with OSHA.
Right.
Mom does some pretty badass things. So
yeah. And she's anyway, well, that's great. So, are you gonna? maybe it's too early to ask, but I mean, are you going to consider running for office again?
You know, it's funny you should say that because it's something that we've had to have conversations about here recently. So definitely thinking it over. I think my biggest priority is making sure that there is a real game plan, that there is a path to victory, and that it is the right thing to do for my hometown. That was always the priority, to make sure that the folks of Charlestown and Ranson had the best representation. And I just want to make sure that I'm that right person. If I'm not the right person, I'll find that person. But, you know, I'm an activist at heart, and I'm still deeply involved with my community. And, I think it's calls and emails every single day about different programs and, Sammy, what do you think, and where can we go? And, you know, I'm always happy to be that collaborator. But as far as the office goes, it's a very different venture, and it's something that you really have to put your, like, whole heart into. Right. And, I just want to make sure that I'm on the right path on that one.
I got
plenty of people that are delusional about their political prospects.
Yeah. I agree, pal. Well, now this coming Thursday, I believe, is the county commission meeting in Jefferson County, and I was thinking about going down. Now, do you think it's wrong of me to ask some of the more recent appointees whether or not they received any Russian money? I mean, I just want to just get that on the record that I'm sure they'll say no, but I mean, in case there were any concerns, you know, that.
I mean,
no?
You know. Inquiring minds want to know, John. But
I do. I mean, I want to. I mean, I just, I'm you know, they're all sworn officers now.
That's the thing, though. It is a public forum, and you are a public servant, so it's part of the process, fielding questions from your constituents. I don't think you're out of line for asking your question.
You know, I mean, I would have thought it would have been an out of line question before, you know, the recent times, right? But now. Now it's something we have to think about, you know.
All the time.
By the next time you're running, I'm going to say, Sammy, are you getting any Russian money? You know.
Yeah, and I'll have to tell you.
Yeah, exactly. You'll get friends. Well, yeah, Vladimir, he's one of my favorite. You know. Oh, boy.
I actually think the question they won't accuse me of Russian money. They'll be like, "Are you taking pesos?" And
yeah, pesos. Right. Yeah, that's right. Pesos from across the wall. From across the wall. I know.
I scaled the wall to get it. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Oh, did you see that? There was something on Facebook, you know, where they have a competition down in Mexico about scaling a wall now.
Mm-hmm.
And they just they have these agile guys, you know, and ladders, and they just go boom, 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 right over the wall in less than a minute, you know. And now they're going to be training the new Olympics in whatever. It's so absurd. I can't even go there.
I don't even quite have the words for an administration that genuinely felt that asserting bigotry and having the other country pay for it.
Yeah.
I just can't.
Yeah, but how about the proposal to pay for it? I mean, you're going to have a 20% tariff. Well, that means that U.S. consumers who buy it will pay 20% more. I don't see how that. I don't see how Mexico pays for that. That seems like that seems like the consumer pays for it. But I must be wrong. I just don't understand this fascist economics. I can't get there. I mean, there's a logic that's escaping me, but.
Oh man, I have to tell you, John, I've never ever seen anything like it.
Yeah,
I've never seen anything like it.
No, I mean the Muslim ban and God Almighty, I mean there's people caught in midair.
You can't normalize that kind of bigotry. It is astounding, and on top of that, like. For you to say to get out of our country at this point, when before you were yelling at the top of your lungs about how all lives matter, or you know, I'm a Christian, or this is my faith. Like this is what it should be about. It should be about inclusivity.
Right.
It should be about love. It should be about empathy. And for anyone to even entertain that this is proper in any way, shape, or form is mind-boggling to me. I will not accept it.
It's the logic of the white supremacist. It's the Steve Bannon thing. Yeah, I mean that's where it's coming from. It all rings a bell. You know, we have this local Nazi that hung out in our Quaker meeting for 5-7 years, you know, and I mean, I listen to all his screeds. It's just the same thing that's coming from the president of the United States. He's a blood brother to David Duke, you know.
Yeah,
so
I think that's what's so amazing to me about all of this. Just because of the role and the stature, people are genuinely trying to normalize this. Like, it's fine. It's totally fine. No, it's not. Like, the premise of our country was never to be this. And we've fought civil rights, you know, we've been in the trenches for decades now. My grandfather marched with King. Like, this is outrageous to me. I to my core, I'm offended, and absolutely offended. And with this particular administration, there is not a single person that could tell me that I need to normalize this president, that I have to accept this president, because he does not represent me. I am an interracial female. I'm an educated interracial female, and everything about me you have sought to disseminate within the first 30 days of your administration.
Oh.
So if you don't think that I won't fight back and ask questions repeatedly to hold you accountable, or resist when you try to make this part of American statutes, and
right.
You're out of your mind. Out of your mind.
I think he's going to try to start a war as soon as possible. Otherwise, the resistance is going to overwhelm him. Don't you think?
It's just, I mean, it's on the horizon. If you don't think that's part of the agenda.
No, I don't know which one he's going to start first, but I assume that given this kind of stuff, he has to start one.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're a fascist and you want to get everybody, you want to shut everybody up. I mean, you got to start a war. You got to have a Reichstag fire. You got to do something, you know. Right? Don't you have to? And everything, you know, it doesn't matter as long as you quote win, end quote. Right? I mean, how
well? And that's
gross.
That just seems to be the way. It's you know, profit through warmongering. And again, that's. I'm truly deeply baffled at that.
Yeah.
For all the pushback and all the obstruction of a man that was that truly sought to represent people as a whole, as a populace, that we're now accepting this kind of hatred, like normalized hatred, to get ahead. And I won't accept it. Millions won't accept it. And I think that just the protests that have happened so far in 2017,
right.
There will be thousands more to come before the year is out.
Hey, did you go down to Washington?
I sure did.
You know, we went down on the UAW bus. That was a well organized affair. They got us all Metro cards.
I should have. You know what? I should have gone down right there with you.
You should have. There was a seat right next to me that was open. You could have gone. You know,
I was actually flying in from one business thing, and then I literally got off the plane, changed, and I went to the march.
All right.
But I did protest. I think that's probably like my fourth action just this year. I used my lunch break to protest for ACA.
Oh, good. Yes, right. I know. That's coming right. Oh, by the way, so Friends, National Committee on Legislation, they have an annual lobby weekend. They do in a spring lobby weekend, and this year they're focusing on healthcare. Okay, and they have a great training set. They're very good at this sort of coordinated national lobbying focus thing they do. So I'm going to have a dinner party and try to raise some money for a scholarship for someone to go down, because it involves 2 days and 2 days and 3 nights, I think, and you get trained, and then you target particular congressmen from your area. I'm sure it'll be probably Joe Manchin and ours, you know, mm-hmm. on a number of. And maybe Capito, I don't know, probably not. She's probably a hopeless cause. But they usually try to get you to go to see somebody where at least the conversation it might be expected to be a little bit constructive, okay, about some aspect of the thing. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And that works out good, because then people feel like they accomplished a little bit, you know, when they go.
No, I love that. I think it's very cool.
Right. So anyway, we're going to do that. And, well, so I'm looking forward to it. But you know, now, do you... Well, I'm trying to get back to your to the personal situation here a little bit, you know, because these sure. good newspaper likes some politics, but you know how they are, you know, these ministers. Well, what happened to her soul?
What happened to her soul?
Yes. Has the bird been released? I don't know that kind of you know, these kind of questions.
Oh, I you know, my soul's intact.
Okay, that's good. That's, oh, so when we were down, I was going to tell you, we were down at the march, okay, and we got on the UAW bus, and I brought, and I went with, you know, JB, and Stuart came down too, and we had a whole busload of mostly folks from the Volvo shop up in Hagerstown, but some from, you know, Ken and Jim Rogers' place there as well. So we, but you know, but the crowd was so huge, right? That I mean, by the time we sort of got to, we came in kind of like behind the stage. I think that's the direction we were coming in from. And we got to a certain point, and then I lost Stuart. And, you know, we couldn't. I don't know what happened. And then so we got to pretty close to where we could almost hear the things. And I found Lynn Yellett and her husband Chess, right? You know, the doctor and all that, and a couple of people from Shepherdstown. But at that, we were right by this tree, you know, in the back of the stage, and it turned out that up in the tree, there was, you know, a couple of young women were having a protest by taking their shirts off. Okay.
Oh, man, that's like Woodstock.
Yeah, except that you know that from that point on, JB would not move. That was the end of JB's migration toward the stage. Anyway, so but but it was the overall. I never heard any of the speeches really, but I did see tons of signs that were so really original and just lots of different people. There was this group of women around us from Loyola University. I think they were all law students. Okay, it must have been about 25 of them came down on a bus, and they. It was really interesting because as a group, they looked kind of like they were standing together like in this big crunch, and they looked like they were made up of just about every color and shade in the world.
Yeah.
You know, I did Loyola University, but they were militant, and, you know, one of them had a sign that said, you're so vain, you probably think this march is about you. It's not. It's about us.
My favorite sign was, I came here to punch Nazis and knit hats, and I'm all out of yarn. That was my favorite sign.
Ooh, that's a cool one, too. Yeah. Well, see, all this individuality in the signs that made it, rather than all the same, made it cool.
Mm-hmm. It was very, very cool.
Oh, so, man.
I've never been so excited in my whole life to not see a single person I knew. Like, that's how massive this was.
That's true. That's true.
It was wonderful. The day after, well, actually, I think I posted, because I'm terrible about taking pictures when I'm at these things. Like, I'm usually like,
me too.
I'm rebel rousing. Like, that's just the
me
reality
too.
Of it.
Me too.
But then, you know, on my way home, I posted, you know, the images of the crowd swell, and you get all of this hateful pushback and about how, like, the movement was about hate and abortion. And that goes to show you how limited the scope people viewed this action that was, it was global.
Mm-hmm. Okay? Oh, yes.
This was a global movement. And on top of that, abortion was not at the top of the list. There were so many other things on there. And mind you, reproductive rights isn't just limited to the big A, you know?
Right,
so
right.
It goes to show you that there's still so much work to be done to truly educate people, and then there's going to be people still that refuse to be educated. They refuse to be woke, if you will. So
right,
we'll continue to fight the good fight. I know that what I saw was probably the largest act of solidarity I've ever seen.
Largest one I've ever seen. The single, I think that one of the marches during Vietnam, I think, reached was bigger. Okay, I can't remember whether it was 70 or 69. One of them was.
I was not around during.
But you know, never something I don't think as widespread and as huge across the whole country and as big. I mean, there were 750,000, they're saying, in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
That's bigger than the D.C. March, I mean, I think, yeah. Although who knows exactly.
Well, that one was massive. You know, they had it going on in Chicago and Boston.
Big one in New York, London.
Austin, Texas, John.
I love it. Well, Austin's like a little, you know, water hole of Texas militancy, I think, you know. But
and it was their safe place, and it goes to show you that there were plenty of people across the state that believed in this cause, because it wasn't just Austin residents that filled the streets of that place.
Right.
Like, the people came from all over, so it's very, very cool. And the, you know, just the act of solidarity in general, just the global movement, you can't ignore that. And for anyone to try to diminish that, in my mind, lets me know that they realize the gravity of what we're about to do.
Right.
As people.
For sure. All right. Well, I got plenty for my article there, pal. You know, I really do. By the way, how old are you?
I'm 32.
32. Okay, I gotta put that in there somewhere. And you were born in Charlestown?
Born in Charlestown. Born and raised in Charlestown, West Virginia.
Wow. Wow. Okay. I got both your parents' names. Okay, I got that. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm good. I'm good with that. I think I got just about everything I need. And plus, you know, I can just make up from me knowing you, you know, in anything that...
Exactly. But if you do need anything, John, just call me.
All right, pal. Thank you so much for your time. Okay. And we'll be in touch. Hey, if you got any time Thursday, we could go do the county commission together. I'll be there at 9:30, you know, and I'll be there at 9 actually before it starts, you know, so I'll put my name on the list for ask some stupid question of these guys anyway, but we could have fun for a little while. You know, I like to watch them and see what they're doing. I mean, the guy from Shepherd there, that beat, you know, Jan, he seems like he's just, you know, that there was a bit of grade acceleration when he passed kindergarten.
Interesting.
He was talking about how liberals are more psychotic than conservative, according to a peer-reviewed study.
Okay, well, we've established that there are clearly alternative facts these days.
Yeah, I guess. A peer-reviewed study. You know,
I'm just, you know, if I could do anything, John, I think that the semantics involved with these freaking words, I hate how they compartmentalize in this way and made liberal and progressive, like this cuss word, basically.
Yeah.
And somehow you being conservative was the right thing. The villainization of a whole faction of people blows my freaking mind.
I know.
So if anything, you know, A, I'd like to blur the lines of this partisan BS that they've got going. But then, you know, the other part of that is really having values at the forefront, as opposed to these blanketed terms that mean jack shit in my mind. Sorry. I didn't mean that.
I hear you, pal. No, that's a perfectly appropriate word in this case, but yes. Okay, pal. All right. Okay, we can say goodbye, and thank you. I got plenty for the article, and now I'll just have to stay up tonight and write it, you know, so. I'll send you a copy, okay, when I get a draft, okay?
Sounds good.
All right, pal. Take care of yourself, all right? And stay in touch. All right, okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that was Sammy Brown. And we've been doing a, you know, basically an interview that's going to be part of a good newspaper article. But that's good enough on this show. I'll probably podcast this one, too. I love talking to Sammy and getting her insights on what's going on. You're listening to Epic Radio, Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio, broadcast from Shepherdstown, West Virginia. And we are above the Four Seasons bookstore right in the middle of German Street. Easy to get to. And so take care of each other. It's late. But Everything Comes Next.
Roland was a warrior from the land of the midnight sun.